I was reflecting earlier this morning during the course of my tenure as the Dharma teacher here for our Florida Community of Mindfulness. I give many Dharma talks, most of them about meditation, mindfulness, engaged Buddhism, meditation, daily life, issues of Dharma, the heart, you know. How to live a noble life, a good life. But I couldn't help but noticing that periodically throughout these 10 years, I would give special talks. And they'd be in relationship to things like natural disasters, war, violence, racial violence, pandemics, epidemics. And, you know, many things that affect people. So I want to read a poem first. This is a poem by Japanese Zen master Ryokan, sort of 18th century, 18th century, or 19th century, 1831 he died, so we considered early 19th century. So this is his poem. And he wrote this after an earthquake. Japan. Day after day, at noon and midnight, the cold was piercing. The sky was thick with black clouds that blocked out the sun. Fierce winds howled, snow swirled violently, while waves stormed heaven, buffeting monster fish. Walls trembled and shook, people shrieked in terror. Looking back at the past 40 years, I now see that things were racing out of control. People had grown lax and indifferent, forming factions and fighting among themselves. They forgot about obligations and duty, ignored notions of loyalty and justice, and only thought of themselves. Full of self-conceit, they cheated each other, creating an endless, filthy mess. The world was rife with madness. No one shared my concern. Things got worse until the final disaster struck. Few were aware that the world was star-crossed and dreadfully out of kilter. If you really want to understand this tragedy, look deep inside, rather than helplessly bemoan your cruel fate. Interesting. Right. Nearly 200 years ago, very different setting, different time, and yet I don't need to draw the parallels. I think they're obvious to us. So today I want to talk about something that's a little unusual. Many of us are familiar with the Buddhist teachings on mindfulness, meditation, on the nature of mind, Buddhist psychology, philosophy. But there's also sort of a aspect of traditional Buddhism that most people don't know about. Again, I find it very interesting. So in a lot of Mahayana Buddhism, there is this area of prediction, prophecy, right? So this, again, and goes back thousands of years, that basically said that the high point for Buddhism was either the first, little discrepancy, different texts, the first 500 or 1,000 years after the time of the Buddha. This was a time when, you know, the Buddhist teachings was very alive, many people practiced earnestly, Buddhism spread wide, many people became enlightened and practiced. You know, anybody who reads Buddhist sutras, it's fascinating, right? I mean, you know, there'd be the sutras, the Buddha would give a talk, and at the end they would say, and so many people attained full enlightenment, and so many people obtained partial enlightenment. I mean, so there was a sense that there was this period of time that was really like a very wonderful age in terms of spiritual practice and awakening. Then there's a second 7 years, which is called like the Dharma semblance age. In this age, people are not practicing as well, but there's more emphasis on building, you know, building monasteries, building temples, building stupas, doing more ritual and things like that. So the Dharma is still very alive, but it's not practiced in as deep a way as it was for the first 1,000 years. Then after that, a couple of 1,000 years, you see we're getting very close to our time. Buddha was about, you know, 600-700 BC. This is called the Dharma ending age, or the degenerate age of Dharma. Or it's also called the age of dregs. You know what the dregs are? It's like, you know, what's left. You know, after you make your coffee, there's the dregs, right? The leftovers. So this is called the age of dregs, which is very interesting. And that's why I was interested in reading the poem, and I want to share with you. So please, for people who sounds this a little strange, just bear with me. I mean, it always sounded strange to me, but I'm beginning to understand that as the decades go by. So this was an age where, what can I say? People's minds are just grosser, heavier. There's more chaos, unrest, more natural disasters, famines, and people are now finding it incredibly difficult to follow a spiritual path, right? People are finding it very difficult even to have a daily 20-minute-a-day meditation practice, right? I mean, it's many people, that's a struggle. It's very difficult to, you know, to just practice all the virtues of this age. So again, the prophecies from 1,000 years ago with, again, war, famine, social disorder, you know, emotions more gross, lifespan more decreasing, people, just their actions. And then I found a very interesting one that I wanted to share with you. And so this is from actually the Hindu tradition of which Buddhism came out of. And in the Hindu tradition, this age is called the Kali Yuga, right? Again, sort of like a end of times. And it's got a list of 50 different things that will be present in this age. And you make up your own mind whether any of it sounds familiar. Rulers will become unreasonable. They will levy taxes unfairly. Rulers will no longer see it as their duty to promote spirituality or to protect the people of their countries. They themselves will become a danger to the world. People will start migrating. We can think of refugees, seeking countries where food is available. Avarice and wrath will be common. Humans will openly display animosity toward each other. Ignorance of spirituality will occur. People will have thoughts of murder with no justification and will see nothing wrong to it. Lust will be viewed as socially acceptable and sexual intercourse will be seen as a central requirement of life. Wrongdoing will increase exponentially while virtue will fade. People will take vows and break them soon after. People will become addicted to intoxicating drinks and drugs. Teachers will no longer be respected, and their students will attempt to harm them. Even their teachings will be insulted. Listen to some of these now. People will not think twice before cutting down trees or destroying forests. Everyone will eat the same kind of food, which means they'll lack discriminations of in matters of food and food habits. Anybody ever heard of junk food? Which is spreading all around the world. Whoever has money will be considered of noble birth and as having good qualities. The one who has power in their hands will be able to steer the course of justice in their favor. The one who lacks money and cannot bribe will be deprived of justice by the courts. In the ashrams, you know, the monasteries, temples, people will indulge in evil conduct and pander to the desires of the world. The ashrams will be full of show-offs who are experts in living off the food of others. People will sell goods with false weights. There'll be lots of deceit in trade and business. And in this age, the young will act like the old, and the conduct that suits the young is seen in the old. The old will think like children, and the young will have the intelligence of the old. I think that's really fascinating. Because have you ever hung around retirees? Some of us may even be in that category. What do most retirees want to do with their life? They want to have fun, right? They want to play. I mean, it's fascinating. Something we usually, ascribe to children. Anyhow. Men will rob possessions of others, even widows. They'll even rob widows. Pay attention to this one. No one will ask for a girl's hand in marriage. No one will duly give away a girl in marriage. Men and women will choose their spouses themselves. I mean, we could have a whole little interesting discussion on that one. Kings, discontented with what they possess, will use every means possible to steal the property of others. People will adorn themselves with the marks of a sadhu. A sadhu in Hinduism is like a religious person. There'll be a profusion of fake sadhus, which we know is true. In this Dharma ending age, everyone will act as they wish. Rains will shower down at the wrong time and other kinds of climate things. Travelers in transit will ask for food and water, but will not receive it. They will be refused shelter and be forced to sleep on the roads. People will leave their own countries and seek refuge in other countries and will roam around the world with lamentation. Sexual skill will be the criterion for excellence in men and women. The highest purpose of life will be to fill one's belly. So that's just a sample. So why do I find this interesting, right? Primarily because since these things were written thousands of years ago, I think we would have to agree there's a lot of truth into our time. And I guess what I want to talk about today is, like for, you know, again, all the things I talked about earlier in terms of our own last 10 years. You know, there's all this and this and this and this, and there's like one thing after another. Would you agree? And if we're not careful, we can see them all as discrete events and not see what is the cause of this great disarray in the world, right? We know there are still people, I believe, even I think our own governor called Hurricane Ian, something biblical, I think something like that. Once in every 500 years, hurricane of biblical proportions. And one has to wonder, where has he been for the last years? I mean, these are becoming no longer once every 500 years, is it? No, they're becoming more and more regular. You know, the fires, the floods, the droughts, social dislocation, the wars, the violence, the divisiveness among human beings, inability to agree on what's going on. Why is that, you see? Why is that? And everybody, of course, has their own point of view. But I guess what I want to talk about from a Dharma point of view is that all these things we're talking about are symptoms. What is the cause? And I think this is important because this is not just, these kind of geological, climate, bigger interstate. They are also very much about each of us. Many people just living their life, even here in this country, which is, has certainly from a material point of view, and in a certain way from a political point of view, has lots of advantages, right, over other places in the world. And yet people struggle. People are not generally happy. People are stressed. People are depressed. People are anxious. People are addicted to this and that. If you've gotten through life and you haven't been addicted to some substance and haven't spent some time in rehab, you're a minority. I mean, that could be an exaggeration, but you know what I mean? I say that because it's been so it's so common, you see? And these are what these predictions and prophecies are saying. This thing just becomes common, right? Why is that? If we don't see the big picture, we are all, each of us, left to find our individual way through this, you see? Alone, we find our way through this. Alone, we come up with our own solutions to this. Alone, we develop our own strategies to deal with this life, to try to have some degree of stability, calmness, peace of mind, etc., which is all good. But unfortunately or fortunately, depending how you look at it, we are not islands unto ourselves. We are all interconnected. We are all being affected, and we are all affecting. We are all being affected by what's going on in the world, and we are affecting what's going on in the world. This is very important to understand. In the truest sense, we are the co-creators of this world. And when I say we, I don't just mean we. you're listening to this talk, I mean we, the whole world. Right? All the continents, all the billions of people, we are creating this world. And the effects that we are seeing in the world are simply part of this interconnection, this interplay, this inter-affective of, we affect the climate affects us. We affect the climate affects us, right? We affect the cause of events comes back to affect us. And so, where does this lead us, you see? So these predictions are not in any way fate. They're not saying this is fate. So please understand, this is not fate. This is not the will of God or the will of Buddha. This is not anything like that. In Buddhism, everything is cause and effect. It is because human beings, that means us, right? We have turned away from a certain kind of life that is meaningful and purposeful and is focused on, what should it be focused on? Goodness, right? Virtue, kindness, compassion. Caring for each other, right? And eschewing all the types of activities which are just creating the morass we find ourselves in. What is one of the biggest things that we're all participating in? consumerism, right? We have become defined by what we consumed, and people live for more. But, you know, where do you think all this societal and climate disruption is coming from? It's people want more and more. But unfortunately, to get more and more, we're having to produce. And to produce, we're having to what? You know, use means of producing, fuels, right? I mean, that's what's running our factories. I mean, all the things we are consuming, our car, I mean, they're all being produced. And in that process of production, natural resources are being utilized. Right? I mean, it's not coming out of nowhere, you see. So we have to see that it's a whole way of living that we have sort of come along, I guess what, since the Industrial Revolution or something, you know what I mean? It's just, and the whole world has jumped on, that is producing this significant problem that is heating up. And we can see the societal breakdown, divisiveness, which is, you know, it's what's the Republicans, it's the Democrats, it's the left, it's the right, it's this, it's that. That's just the symptoms, you know? That's just the symptoms of something deeper. Right? When people have lost their ability to lead a simple, natural, good life, and have lost the ability to really understand what life is, again, about, then all this other stuff happens, you see. Right? Right? We're endlessly consumed by what? By dramas. Political dramas, personal dramas, celebrity dramas. I mean, it's right. We're endlessly consumed by that. You know, and then all of a sudden, what? A hurricane, you know, Ian happens. A couple of years after Hurricane Katrina happens, a couple of years after Hurricane Sandy happens, a couple of years after, you know, we read about the wildfire. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to keep belaboring. I sound like a prophet of doom, which I'm really not. And we don't see how they're all related, and they all come back to what? The actions of human beings. In Buddhism, we say body, speech, and mind, right? That's how we are in the world. We act with our bodies. We do things. We consume, we eat, we produce, we buy, we walk around, we all the things we do. We fly here, we fly there, right? You know, we all the things we do, all the ways we speak to one another. I mean, if you think about what goes on in the political realm, the social realm, the realm of countries, they're endlessly what? Using words with each other. A lot of those words are violent words, angry words, intolerant words, hateful words. I mean, that's the context, you see, in which we now accept as normal, which is really the frightening thing. That we accept this as normal. And within this new morass of immorality, we try to establish some kind of moral compass, you see. In this vast world of where life is defined by how we consume and produce, you know, we try to kind of produce a little sanity, you know what I mean? We buy green, you see. You know what I'm saying? We do all these good things, we recycle, we do all these, you know, which are all good, but it's because we're not really looking at really what's going on. Maybe a little more AC, maybe that's one of the things going on. Is anybody a little warm? No? And of course, when I say, let's have a little more AC, what am I doing? What? What? Consuming. I mean, we're, yeah. Yeah, so what does this have to do with why we came together this morning? Because I truly believe that for human beings to restore themselves to sanity and to a sane way of living and interacting, for human beings to really be clear-headed enough and unified enough that we can deal with these significant issues, we need a fundamental change in consciousness. And consciousness is of the mind. Most people, if you talk to them about their minds, would look at you like what? Like, what are you talking about? You see? I mean, we've lost the ability to be in touch with ourselves. What's going on in my mind? What kind of thoughts are arising in my mind all day? What kind of mind states? What kind of emotional states? What are my attachments? What am I holding on to? What are my aversions? So to have some kind of health self-awareness, which is like a necessity as a tool, right? That's what we call meditation. That's mindfulness. To me, it's no longer a kind of a spiritual add-on, like a value added to life, which it is for many people. I think it's absolute necessity. Because I think many of us would realize that what we see in the world is also going on within our own minds. That we all have anger and hatred and fear and worry and sadness and despair and jealousy and pride within our own minds, you see. Our own minds are not at peace. And so how can we manifest in a peaceful way in the world if we're not at peace, you see? So a meditative basis to one's life, and basically having, a clear ethical ground to one's life so one can navigate this world, which mostly values what? Consumption. Like it said, noble people are now the people who have the most money. I mean, these are the people who make the front cover of Time magazine, right? Nothing to do with their quality as human beings, right? How much money they have or how much power they have. I mean, these are... So why am I talking this way? Because here in Florida, we are dealing with the after effects of a hurricane. And all this social dislocation and suffering that people are dealing with. But if we listen to the climate scientists, and they're pretty much all in agreement, this is just the beginning, my friends, right? You all know that, you read the same thing. This is just the beginning. We're entering a period of great social, environmental, dislocation. So the ability to have a ground and a stability and a clarity and an open-heartedness within ourselves, and even more importantly, to have that so we can be there for others. People say, well, why are you doing all, like here, this is our own little tiny little Florida community of mindfulness, our own little grounds, our own beautiful gardens. Why are we doing this? So we can be a refuge for people. So we can be an oasis for people. Especially as things get more and more difficult. for human beings. So we can do that as a community, and we can do that as individuals. Every one of us have families, have friends, have social networks, have work, you know, and listen to people. When you listen to people, what do you hear? Everybody's happy? Everybody's at peace? Is that what you hear? No. It's rare that somebody would say that. Oftentimes people equate kind of happiness or peace that nothing significantly bad is going on. But it's on the positive side, it isn't very high. Yeah, so there's all kinds of, there's all kinds of political answers, there are all kinds of social answers, there are all kinds of environmental answers to all the problems that face us socially, environmentally, personally. There's lots of therapy available, people going more and more therapy, people, look at the stuff that's coming out about teenagers and kids, right? More and more mental health issues. But we're taking care of the symptoms. Nobody asks why. Why is that? What is the environment? Remember, we create the environment. The environment affects us, and how we respond to that affects the environment, and then it affects us. Why are kids who are kids, right, feeling such, many of them, such stress, such anxiety, such fears, such aloneness? Surrounded by people, being in school, and yet they feel alone. I want to open the floor. I don't think I'm seeing anything that many people aren't seeing. And I think as a society, we need to begin having discussions at this level. Because otherwise we're in a situation where we're just, again, the symptoms just increasing. And all we're doing is treating this symptom and that symptom and that new symptom and that new symptom and that new symptom. And very few people going, what's underneath this all? And again, we're all experts in the sense. We don't need experts. We're all alive, we're all present, we all see what's going on. So this is my just 2 cents. So I'm interested in hearing from people online, people in the hall, questions or just, short statements about how do you see this? Am I totally off? What was the story of Noah? Anybody remember that? I'm not a biblical scholar. What was Noah? Did he warn people that a flood was coming? He did. Okay, just checking. Right? So he did warn people, right, that a flood was coming. And of course, everybody listened to him and, right? Everybody got their arcs together, right? It didn't happen that way? No. Yeah. So, it's interesting, right? So again, I'm interested in questions for me in the hall, online, or just your response and listening. Yes, Casey in the back. And Brian, just let us know, okay.
Thanks, Fred. I guess my question is, everything you said feels very true, but mm-hmm. It feels very overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah.
And how, where do we start?
So this is key. So where do we start?
Yeah.
We start, one of the things in our tradition, we go, what? Life only happens in the present moment, right? Past is past. Future hasn't come. The only thing real is now, Casey. So all that really matters is right now, moment to moment, how do you want to show up? That's not overwhelming. You see, if you fill your head with thoughts and you know, and listen to talks like Fred just gave, you know, over and over again. Yeah, that could be, please don't do that. You know, some people are, you know, they kind of get addicted to this stuff, you know, they love to read the news, you know, it's over and over and get angry, feel bad, you know. No, you need enough. Right? You need enough, a titrated amount, right, until you get it. Once you get it, then you walk your path. I think that's important, you know what I mean? So, you know, like for many people, how many people are new here today in the hall or have just been coming recently? Yeah, so, you know, and many of you are, you know, checking this out, checking that out, exploring things, which is good, right? And hopefully at some point I'm not saying for us, but you know, you'll find your path, you see. And once you find your path, you walk it. Which is, again, hard for us as Americans, because we like what? We always like to keep our options open. Don't we? Oh, you know, something better. Actually, somebody, what is the young people's F-O? Fear, FOMO. Everybody know that? I had to learn it. Right? Isn't that sort of a pervasive thing among generation XYZ or something? Right. You know? FOMO, fear of missing out. I mean, like, that's pervasive. You know, it's like, there may be something better. You see, because we think the answer is out there. So we go around this teacher, that teacher, this spiritual tradition, this blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? But that's not transformative. I think it's good to do, you know, checking it out, but, you know, I remember years ago, there used to be, I don't know if people still talk about, people define themselves as spiritual seekers. Do people still talk that way? What? They still, you know. And I would say, well, that's good, but, you know, I hope you become a spiritual finder at some point. You know, I mean, like some people say, well, I'm a spirit, you know, I meet people, you know, how long have you been doing that? Oh, about 20 years, you know, I'm a seeker. I'd say, you know, come on. You know, that doesn't sound, I mean, they'd say it like in a very positive way. But I would say, no, you want to, you know, if you're seeking something, you want to find it. Isn't that true, whatever it is? Yeah, so if you're seeking, you know, if you're speaking a spiritual path or a meditative path because you are seeking inner peace, open-heartedness, living without fear, living without anger, you know, being less selfish and more selfless. If that's what we're seeking, then we need to find a means of accomplishing that. And that's a spiritual path, you see. A spiritual path is something we walk. So I guess I'd say to you, Casey, you know, just, you know, that's it. You know, and you want to get, you know, it's kind of like you know your spiritual path. You know how you want to be, you know. But that's manifested moment to moment, day by day. So you know, looking at the big picture, impermanence, big picture, right? I mean, I've talked to some members, you know, had 4 foot of water in their house. You know, it's got to be totally, you know, torn apart, right? Other people, you know, like that. I mean, impermanence. Right. I mean, for those of us in Tampa Bay, we thought what? A hurricane of a century was coming where? Right toward us. I mean, it's so weird, isn't it? And then when we hear it's veered off, there's a part of us that's relieved and happy. Right? And yet our happiness or relief is somebody else's suffering. I mean, this is this strange world of impermanence. I mean, that's what we live in, and it's just becoming more and more apparent to us that everything is changing, that we really can't count on anything for really any kind of solid ground or stability. We want to understand that, so it's no longer a problem to us. You know, we live within it. We live within the context of impermanence. I mean, that's normal. Other questions or comments? Yes, Brian, and then.
We have a few online.
Okay.
First one's a quick one. Donna Hobbs says, I see what you see, dear teacher. And that's it.
No, okay.
The second is Maya. And Maya says, hi, I am in Sarasota, and I was and still am terrified of what happened here. I am grateful to the Sangha and thank you. I think you're right, Fred, but it's frightening. I breathe and I know I am still alive.
So a few days ago, one of my members came to see me. This was kind of post Ian. This is somebody in this area. And they started saying to me, well, you know, it was difficult. I had a lot of anxiety, but I dealt with it pretty good. And all of a sudden, they started tearing up. Right? Tearing up. I said, well, you know, just let that come through, what's going on? And they were terrified. You know, especially when they saw, you know, and as the pictures in the news began to come in, what happened to other parts in Florida, and realized that that could have happened here and happened to them. That was terrifying. And yet, it's a becoming not uncommon human experience, isn't it? I mean, you know, the fires out west, California, I mean, you see what's going on, right? I mean, how many places now are in drought conditions and they're talking about, no, you know, lack of water, and you know what I mean? And so, she said, you know, how do you live? She said, I get impermanence up here. I get instability up here. But how do you live in a world like that? So what came to mind with kind of perhaps a little silly example, I said, did you ever, you yourself or when your children were young, go to the beach and you know, build sandcastles? She said, yeah. And did you put a lot of energy and attention and enjoy making the sandcastles? And she said, yeah. And when you were done, what did you do? Well, you know, we left. Oh, you spent all this energy building this thing, and then you left and went home. Is that true? Yeah. And if you came back 2 days later, what would you find? Gone. So why do it? You see, that's nihilism. Well, you know, why do it? Eternalism is expecting things to last forever. Nihilism is the opposite. Buddhism is in between. We build, we create, we have relationships, and yet we know that none of it is solid and permanent. That it is essentially sort of a house of sand, right? I mean, our life is a house of sand. We're gonna die, right? I mean, that is just the truth. I mean, it's just a fact. So from that point of view, why do anything? Or from that point of view, it's terrifying. For some people, the idea of not existing, terrifying. But that's just the fact. It's okay. One of the reasons it's okay is not because it's natural, normal world, but because there is an aspect of our mind, we might say, that is eternal. Our Buddha mind, which is beyond birth and death, that one can realize, one can experience. And that is very sustaining, especially at times like this. You know, the physical world is unstable. Anyway, anything that can be created can be destroyed. Right? the mental world, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, they all come and go. But the fundamental mind awareness is always here, always present. And we can learn to touch into that, to experience that. And that gives us a deep ground in life. As you know, as the movie keeps changing, right? And again, I think, you know, is it normal not to want to suffer? Of course it's normal. Who would, only a very sick person would want to suffer. And yet the Buddha taught, you know, 2,600 years ago that suffering is part of life. There's no getting around it. Thank you. Yes, over here.
I was hoping to, my
just
name's Lindsay.
Before, just hold it up like that so
people. Higher, yeah, okay. I'm Lindsay.
It's Lindsay.
I want to pull us back a little bit to children, if we can.
Yes.
And through Ian, I had a great conversation with one of my neighbors. Her son and grandchildren came to stay with her during the hurricane, and children were young, maybe 5 and 7. They were very, very excited for the power to go out. And then when it did, they were really upset to learn that that meant they couldn't watch movies. And so children have this interaction with consumerism, and then we sort of pull it away from them in an interaction like this. I'm a teen mom. I have twins who are teenagers, a boy and a girl. And their consumerism is a little different. My daughter, as the power went out and she was understanding the gravity of Ian, became very concerned with the contents of the Amazon cart and when they might arrive now, you know, and so we have these, I'm wondering how, you know, and with my own children, I get frustrated, but wondering how best to model something different. This is the challenge, how teenagers will no longer hear me, right? They're not in a point where they want to listen, but they're in a point where I'm wondering how we interact with children in a way that creates positive change.
So that's a whole Dharma talk in and of itself. I encourage you to get involved with the family program and talk to other parents who I'm sure are dealing with the same issue. So you know, we create the culture creates us, okay? So there's no getting around that, right? We're all in this culture. And part of that culture, as you say, is not only is it very much a consumer culture, but it's a media-driven consumer culture even more, right? So that's the world in which we act. That's the world where we interact and the world where they interact. Now, I would say it begins with us first, right? As the adults, as the parents, you know, what are we modeling in our life, in our relationship to Amazon and consumer? You see what I'm saying? Sometimes we don't realize, what are we modeling, you see? I mean, to me, change begins with myself. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh said, you want peaceful world, peace begins with me. I need to become a peaceful person. So if I want to raise children with a certain kind of values, a certain way of orientation to the world, it begins with me, right? To me, I mean, that is the one person that I at least have some chance of, controlling their behavior, their see. So this is very important, you see, because often we look around and we want to change others. So the first thing is that we model it, right? Secondly, the kind of environment you create in your home, right, is also important. You know, the kind of culture that your children are growing up in your family, is very important, because that's one way we transmit. But you're also talking about a very real problem, which is, especially as they get older, but even starts very young, they're beginning to have their own culture, right? You know, their friends, their school, their teens, all the things they're accessing. So we have to realize they are deeply affected by their culture. And of course, they're children, they're teenagers, which means even though they think they know everything and they're the, you know, They're very not that developed yet. So we do our best, right? But we understand, unless you're gonna, you know, pull your kids out of school and homeschool them up in some rural area and never let them, right, go off the grid, so to speak. You know, we have to learn to kind of give our children the skills. You know, having raised, I had twins, they're now in their early 40s, you know, who were, you know, outwardly normal children, going through all the normal things. Now they're raising their children. You know, I did my best as a parent. You know, mother did their best as parents to give them values and create a certain kind of environment for them. At a certain stage in life, did they kind of chart their own course? Yes. But did I notice, as they've gotten older, they've come back, you know? Because I think as they kind of begin to experience life, all of a sudden, you know, maybe the things that you are sharing with them and teaching them, advice you're giving them, they'll understand more down the line. So when we're, you know, we're seed planters, right? That's all we can do. We plant seeds, and we do our best to nurture them so they have them available to them. I think it's important that we acknowledge, you know, why they see the world the way it is and why they have their values, but also begin to suggest, you know, there is another way. Yeah, and, you know, impermanence. I mean, I think that's one of the most essential things that you could teach somebody, is that, you know, everything's impermanent, nothing is stable. The idea that we have that somehow the world is going to operate the way we want it, you know, today even, is a fantasy. We have no idea. So I think that's a wonderful thing to share with our children. Thank you, Lindsay. Yes?
We have many online.
Okay.
I'll just start with one.
Okay.
This is Andrew McMillan.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I see within myself as well constant or at least continuous usage of social media.
Yeah, yeah.
Short clips, scrolling, and similar to what you said earlier, consuming the next best thing, so to speak. I do not see social media as necessarily wrong, but as you say, we can use a titrated amount.
Yeah, so, you know, our problem is addiction. And just like, you know, do they still call them pushers? We used to call them pushers. So-called pushers, you know, pushers are selling a product, right? You know, I mean, we have to understand pushers are selling a product, right? It is the consumer that has to, you know, consumer beware. You know, social media, as we all know, you read the articles, very sophisticated people, they understand human psychology, they understand addiction, they understand dopamine, they understand endorphin. I mean, they understand what's going on. Right, and they are developing products that you know they want you to be addicted. Right, I mean, so it's just like the pusher wants you to consume their product. Yeah, so we have to be very aware, and we have to put constraints upon ourselves. I mean, I don't know any other way around it because we're dealing with something that is so sophisticated. It's so easy, you know. I mean, I think if you're an addict or an alcoholic or something, at least you have to go out and get your stuff, right? But here, it's so easy. You just open a screen and there it is. And what happens? We're the king and queen of our world. We can go anywhere, right? Look at anything, consume any kind of information, research anything in the world. I mean, it's like the ego, this is, if the ego would make up a world, this would be its world. I can satisfy every desire, every interest, all by myself. I mean, it's so, yeah. I think we have to be very aware, just like addicts have to be aware, and we have to be very able to put limits on ourselves. A lot of people have trouble. They say, well, I have trouble, you know, establishing a daily meditation practice. Well, because when I hear what they're doing, it's like, well, of course you are. Because they don't have it scheduled, you see. So they want to learn something, but they don't have it scheduled. Like every day, I'm going to get into this, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to meditate. And like, that's just part of your life, like anything else. But they base it on how they're feeling. Well, I think I got to do this first. Before I meditate, I got to do this first. And before you know, what do you think? They don't meditate. Again, we just get distracted. So I think it's very important, especially today, more than ever, that if there is a direction we want to move out of life, if there's a set of behaviors that we want to learn, if there's a set of behaviors we want to unlearn, we have to be very conscious about that, very deliberate, very intentional, because distractibility, you might have noticed, is rampant, right? It's rampant. And now that so many people are actually earning their living on computers, on screens, right? Or that's so much part, we are being trained to spend our life on screens. We go from business screening to social screening to media screening to, you know, relaxation screening. I mean, it's so people are just on their screens all day, right? I mean, even social interaction is screening. Yeah, I did a strange thing yesterday. I'd gotten an email from my cousin up in Connecticut wanting to check in. You know, just check in, how you're doing. And I had this strange experience. So there I was going through my emails. I saw her thing and I was starting to type a reply. And all of a sudden I had this strange thought, you know, I could call her. And you know what? We had about a half hour conversation, very, you know, that was a connection, you see? But if I just emailed her, it would have been, yeah, everything's good. Thank you very much. Hope you're well. You all do that, right? Like, we're just sending bits of information to each other. There's no warmth, there's no connection, there's no flow. So I really want to propose a revolutionary thing that we call people. I know it's quicker to text them and much more efficient, but there's something lost. And then we have to see these things in context of how this is affecting our life and the patterns of our life. Well, one more, Brian.
Okay, there's many. I'm going to do an editor's choice.
What?
Editor's choice here. Nancy says, what about urgency? The planet is burning, flooding, people are dying. Waking up to our greed is absolutely necessary.
What, waking up what?
Waking up to our greed is absolutely necessary, both individually and collectively. But don't we have to do more individually and collectively?
We have to look deeply at the cause of the problem. That's my answer. We have to look deeply to the cause of the problem. For example, human beings have been fighting war and violence with each other for thousands of years. I've said this before. For those of us even of this past couple of centuries, we have had major world wars to end wars. We've had major wars to end fascism. And yet, none of it works. It's all temporary fixes. This is very hard for people. My own personal belief is, yeah, you do what you can, but this is not going to change until human beings change. And what's the fundamental? Greed, anger, fear. And as long as that is dominating the minds of human beings, you know, yeah, that's the problem. You know, we have to look deeply into the causes. And people don't want to do that. Yeah, I mean, because I think many of us are losing that ability to even do that. We just want to react. We want to react from crisis to crisis. Yeah, I mean, we are facing, as a planet, as a people, significant issues about the, you know, our future. The future of our planet, the future of our life. Yeah, and a significant shift has got to take place. And if all we're doing is putting out little fires one after the other because there's urgency, you see, we'll never see the big picture. So we need to do both, but we have to be clear, if you really want to, you know, prevent a problem, you have to look at what's causing it. And again, yeah, endless urgency, endless crisis. I understand. I see the same thing. And the, you know, the initial knee-jerk response is just I, you know, we want to do something. Why? Because we feel impotent. So we want to do something. But just acting out of that is not going to produce anything of any real significant shifts. Yeah, this is going to take a significant shift in human beings. People say, oh, you can't do that. You know, but if you remember a couple of years ago, this whole society shut down, right? Because of COVID, remember? There was nobody going up and down the streets. It was incredible. Nobody was going to work. Some people were going to work, but you know what I'm saying? It was when people really get it, then people will act. Right? So those who get it now have to do their best. Right? But yeah, I mean, I certainly you know, would support anybody who's trying to do good in this world. Trying to alleviate the suffering of beings, trying to bring clarity. Thank you. For those who want to just continue, again, not views, but just experiences, come on Tuesday night. Because I'm really interested in hearing how people are processing this within their own minds, within their own lives. You know, we're all reading the same news. We're all having the same experience. Like, what is that? How does that? We need to listen to each other. I think that's where it begins. Thank you, everyone.